Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Monday, March 29th, 2010. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is with me as usual.
Hello. You sound like you're banging stuff together or something.
I keep doing this. There you go. I keep forgetting to put the microphone in front of me.
Ah, okay.
So
yeah,
I just put the microphone in front. Because, like, it normally sits, like, yeah, I've got one of these nice big, like, they're called Blue microphone. Blue is the company, and this is it's the Blue Snowball is what I have, with a little stand. And I usually keep it to the side of my monitor up on the side. I got it for Christmas. It was very nice. But like I start recording and forget to like move the damn thing in front of me. So it can hear me.
It is a very nice sounding microphone, by the way. Yeah, it's got very good sound quality.
Thank you. I enjoy it, and it looks cool too. You know, it's just sort of like thing, you know.
Okay. All right.
And anyway, so before we get started, I did want to mention that I did get one piece of feedback last week for the show.
Okay.
And
wait, now I remember the feedback. I forgot about it.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. All right, so the feedback for those of you who listened last week, this feedback actually came from my sister. Who sent me an email saying, "Feedback. Sometimes I find it disturbing to hear my brother read the poem of the week, particularly this past one. I suggest more PG-13 rated poems."
Now, I gotta say that I had, obviously, when we record the program, Sam doesn't belt out the poem of the week. This happens afterwards.
Well,
okay?
And one reason is we usually record like we are now, on what is Sunday evening local time here. And the poem of the week is always the Monday poem on Notel Motel, which doesn't come out till midnight. So usually about 5 or 6 hours after we record the show is when the poem comes out. So I always tend to get it later, and I'll record it and add it in. And last week's poem was entitled "I Love Men." by Shanna Compton, and included such lovely lines as, "I love and adore and worship the hindquarters of my husband." So
actually, those were the lighter parts of the poem. So I see the feedback. So I'm like, well, I hadn't listened. I don't listen to all the podcasts again. And lately I haven't been as, I usually listen to them more, but lately, because I am not working from home as much as I used to, I haven't worked at home in probably maybe once in the last 4 months. So I pulled it back and I went, well, let me see what the heck was the poem? So I heard the poem, and I gotta say that I was laughing after seeing your sister's feedback. I was just laughing hysterically, because I realized that if I heard if I was her and I heard my brother reading that poem, I would have also been like, oh, something. I just, no.
And also, I'll also add that we got another sort of piece of feedback sort of indirectly, because I forwarded my sister's feedback to the proprietor of Notel Motel, our friend Reb, who forwarded it to the poet who responded back that I just laughed myself silly. That is the best performance of that poem ever. Thanks. So
I gotta say that, one of the things that came about that we were talking about this, I mean, I've been to some poetry readings as well, and I gotta tell you, Sam, you do a pretty damn good job
reading those poems.
I mean, it's pretty good, So that was the feedback from last week. I don't know if Sam will actually probably. I'm expecting Sam not to take the poems down to PG-13 and just read whatever is the poem of the.
I told my sister via email, the poem. I don't select these poems. These are always the Monday poem at notelmotel.org, and so I read what comes up. So these are selected by Reb and her compatriots, so I guess I could conceivably pick a different day and do I don't like Mondays, I'll do Tuesdays. They're all by the same poet in a given week. But I'm always going to do Monday. You know?
Okay.
So, you know, it's nice and easy and simple. And also, it's the least weight. Like, you know, I've actually managed for the last couple weeks to get these podcasts out within a few hours of recording them.
Yes, I've noticed.
You notice, you know, so as opposed to Thursday or Friday, which had been the pattern. And, yeah, I'm not going to pretend I'll always be able to do this. Like, if life comes up, the podcast waits, you know. But you know, so, like, yeah, as it is, you know, I can't actually finish the show until the podcast gets published for Monday. So if I was waiting for Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday, it'd be longer. But, you know, whatever. Anyway, so that was interesting. And, you know, I just want to say, you know, my husband is so hot and I love it when my boyfriend snuff my crumb pie between their mandible police hats.
Okay, and on that note, let's move on to other topics, shall we? Okay.
Sure. Well,
I think that anybody who was really part of the more majority just completely signed off our podcast today.
You know, well, you know. Oh, well.
Oh, well. What are we going to do?
So, we wanted to start out with a follow-up on the healthcare stuff. Because, you know, our last show, we were recording it right as it was passing in the House, and as the Senate version was passing in the House, there was some back and forth. It did go to the Senate. They immediately after passing the Senate version, the House passed a bill of fixes, which went to the Senate. The Senate actually did make a couple of minor changes. And so it went back to the House again, and the House passed it. The Senate changes really were minor. The Republicans tried introducing all sorts of amendments, and the Democrats basically maintained discipline.
You know, voted them all down.
Voted it all down. There were things like, you know, no Viagra to prisoners and things like that.
No Viagra to prisoners?
Yeah, like
is there a program for Viagra for prisoners?
Well, apparently the Republicans wanted to make sure there wasn't. I don't know. anyway, or yeah, whatever.
Well, or anyway.
Maybe it was Viagra to pedophiles. I forget. Anyway.
Okay, well, anyway.
Anyway, the they did find, however, a couple of things which the parliamentarian ruled that if they stayed in there, that the bill reconciliation rules wouldn't apply. And so they had to make a couple minor fixes, but they made them and it went to the House and it was voted on pro forma and, you know, no real drama there. So in the end, everything happened. You know, the fixes went through and, you know, this is a now law. Obama signed it all. And now one of the questions is, you know, what did the Republicans do now? At first, they were saying, well, we're completely going to run on repealing all of this, blah, blah, blah. And then even within the course of the week, they started backing off on that slightly and saying, well, of course, there are parts of it that we agree with, and we wouldn't repeal those parts. We'd only only repeal these bad parts. Yeah, so
I was like just looking at some of the rhetoric and looking at, you know, somebody went back and like did a nice summary of the rhetoric that was said the same time that they passed Social Security and the same time they passed Medicare, you know, all of those. It was a lot of the same shit. And, you know, what came about is nothing. Okay. I mean, that's reality.
Well, I mean, now, the thing here is, I mean, if you just do the math on repealing, at this point to repeal the law, you not only have to get a majority in the House right, to agree with you.
And the Senate.
You also 60% on both. And get the 60% in the Senate to right, to overcome a filibuster, assuming they don't get rid of filibuster rules or anything.
Right.
But then assuming the president is against repeal, you actually have to have 67 votes you have to have 2/3 majority in both houses to override the veto.
Right.
So which means,
okay.
Know, everybody agrees that the Democrats, I mean, almost everybody agrees that the Democrats are going to lose a considerable amount in both the House and the Senate in this next election cycle. It almost always happens in the off-year election following a new party taking over the presidency. But, you know, they're absent a miraculous recovery in the economy very quickly in the next few months, it's also very predictable based on that kind of thing. But no one's talking about the Republicans having those kinds of majorities, even if they regain the control in the House, which
they can't take the Senate. Right.
Well, no, there's actually like some of the analysis I see have them having like a 5 or 6% chance of taking the Senate as well. But even if they take the House and the Senate, repealing is still hard unless they take the presidency as well. So really, right. if anyone was serious about a repeal, they're talking 2012, not 2010 elections.
Right. So anyway, so that's way off. But I think the one thing that was interesting was just, you know, all the hyperbole and the threats of violence that happened during the week. I mean, not that this hasn't happened before, but, you know, the kind of calls that were made to senators, some of the stuff that I've heard, I mean, quite aggressive talk. And the one thing that I find more surprising is that somebody did the survey about all these people that are opposed to it, especially the people that are in the Tea Party movement. And it's kind of funny. Most of these people are people that actually would be benefited by the plan, but yet they're out there pounding the pavement.
Well,
saying,
you know, I hear that argument a lot, and I understand why people are like, why would you vote for something that's against your own interests? But the counter argument is, sometimes you have a larger feeling of what is right and wrong that even if it would benefit you personally, you still think it's the wrong thing to do. And I can certainly buy that. However, I think in many cases, a lot of these people don't even realize that, in fact, they would personally be benefited by this.
Yes, I think that that's the case more than the other one. I think that they don't realize that they are actually benefiting it. And so, I don't know. I just think it's just a lot of strange rhetoric. Now, there was a poll that came out in Florida this week that showed Floridians very opposed to the law, like by a margin of north of 60-some-odd percent.
Yeah, I saw
okay?
that.
Now, the one thing I think is that right now, I think that this is too soon to even take a view or you know, to take a snapshot of this. I mean, I really think that as time elapses and people see the implementation of this go through, I guarantee you that it's like things that have happened before, a lot of this crazy rhetoric will obviously calm down, and like a lot of the people who are opposed to it will probably reflect on it and say, well, I guess it wasn't really Armageddon and the
Well, one of the things, of course, of
the new dictatorship, I guess.
Yeah, but you know, but there's a lot of time to make hay on about it in the meantime, because you know this plan is structured so that you know, it takes years to fully come into effect. I mean,
well, there are reasons for that.
Well,
I know.
It takes time to adjust certain things, and there are certain things that are happening within 3 to 6 months, even.
Right.
But there are other things that don't happen for almost a decade.
No, but that's true. But I think that the fact that Armageddon didn't happen, okay, will probably be just the fact that all of a sudden there isn't a Gestapo lined up outside the hospitals ready to execute patients, I guess, as some people have even, well, I mean, you know, we did have that. They talked about the death panels. I had a couple of people talk about, I mean, I've heard some crazy shit. I'm like, guys, have you ever read, I mean, I know that I am not the most versed on the law, but I'm like, I heard some people say some shit that I'm like, dude, do you have any clue what they're passing? I mean, because I'm like, I don't know what the hell you're talking about, okay? That's nowhere in the plan. I mean, who is your news source, for crying out loud? So I just think that as time elapses and some of the people see that none of those Armageddon elements are in the plan, you know, that some people will just, you know. And plus, somebody said that, you know, remember America's attention spans, really. 6 months from now, I mean, I highly doubt this is going to be a hot button topic.
Wait, what were you talking about, Yvonne?
Exactly.
Yeah, well, I agree. You know, I mean, fundamentally, American memory is extremely short with these kinds of things. I mean, we look at amazement at these countries that are having wars over things that happened hundreds of years ago, but we can't even remember what happened 2 months ago.
That's pretty much it, yep.
You know, and yeah, I mean, they're even before the November elections, I mean, there are going to be, what, 8 more months of things happening.
Pretty much.
You know, and...
I mean, just think about this. If all of a sudden the economy has a couple of robust quarters of growth, and there's additional employment picks up or something, you know, something, most of these people are going to be like, health what? Who? They're not going to even remember any of it. So, you know...
Well, and it really depends. A lot of this as well is... You know, under norm... Can the Democrats manage to put a consistent positive narrative around this? And this is where it falls back down, because Democrats are really, really bad at this stuff, you know, and they are able to, you know, this is one of the biggest, you know, partisan Democratic successes in a long, long time.
Since Clinton was president.
Maybe even before, in terms of actually getting some agenda through and making it into law and pushing forward, you know, their viewpoint.
Right.
But yet, still, most of the narrative is from the Republican side about, you know, how awful this is. You know, and, you know, this is a matter of, you know, messaging and politics and being able to, like, you know, get through and say, this is, you know, this is what we're doing and why, and this is why it's good. And, you know, the Democratic Party has been notoriously bad at that kind of thing, you know, and whereas the Republicans have been really good about setting a consistent message and pushing it and repeating it over and over and over again until people believe it. And
this turning red in the face, angry, pissed off, has happened today. There was some summary about some of the today, you know, the talk shows. I mean, even today, some of the Republican guys on TV looked like they were ready to explode on TV. Okay, well, I mean, it was
and you know, people remember that, and fundamentally, like, for the vast majority of people out there, they don't pay attention to the details of what's happening and what's in this legislation or what's not in this legislation or whatever the intricate discussions of policy are. They pay attention to the tone of the discussion and what's being said. And yeah, that's something that over time the Republicans have gotten pretty good at, and the Democrats just generally have not done as well. Now, who knows what they'll do going forward, but it will be interesting to watch. And I generally agree with you that by the time we get to November, healthcare will have receded from the national consciousness to a large degree, and some other issue will be present. I mean, you only have to look back to the 2008 election season to see this. I mean, when we were starting the primary cycle, everybody figured the election would all be about Iraq.
By the time
we got to November, you know, Iraq was like a dead issue that, you know, for the most part, people were like, okay, well, you know, Bush is pulling out anyway. And so everybody seems to essentially be proposing the same kind of stuff at this point. And B, oh my God, the economy.
Yes. Oh my God, the economy. That's right. Because the economy exploded, right then. I mean, or actually imploded probably is the more correct term.
But in any case, the point is, you know, the narrative does change on a dime. So, I don't know. I mean, I still expect the Democrats are going to have losses this time around. And, you know, I've said before, in many cases, I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I think, you know, divided government tends to often provide better results. But, you know, we'll see what happens here. I think we beat that one to death. It's time for a break, and we'll be back with something else. We'll be right back.
Right back.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by Notel Motel.
Hymn 1 by Valerie Witt. When I return broken, the tree I used to before winter climb, the neighbor saw to its low branches reborn, In history stilled, each visit drop you spiny spheres. Two seeds released, open, stumbling, brother, maybe sweet gum, one sister, three. Furrowed ridges, I wasn't too much trouble, you said, river, a seedling browsed by birds, squirrels, when no one. I used to before dying rise in glory twigs, winged brown and stout. The terminal bud is large orange scales. In the living room cards we played, climbing if footholds grow. We may once gumballs prickle the ground, everybody lost wearing leaves like stars.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
Okay, we are back. So we don't have a huge number of topics here. We mentioned that, you know, Obama flew to Afghanistan, but what is there to say about that? The iPad's coming out next week, but, you know, that's next week. At least one of our listeners I know has pre-ordered one. So... we're going to try to see if he'll agree to come on and talk about it once he has it in his hands. Not much else. So the only other thing I had that was, you know, really out there at all is there seems to be a growing scandal in the Catholic Church around the Pope and his previous involvement in covering up child sexual abuse before he was Pope.
We're going to talk about this? Okay, all right. Well, having been raised a Catholic, okay, although definitely I am not a practicing one by any stretch of the imagination, I actually, you know... I've assigned myself as agnostic for a long time. I mean, I think that they're just fucking churches bullshit, man. Jesus man, what a! Let me tell you something.
Go ahead. A
couple of years after I graduated from high school, go to a high school reunion. I gotta admit, I did have a good education. I went to a Catholic school,
right?
And the religious order that ran it, most of the guys were very good people. Okay, all right, most of them. Okay, very good people. Those guys I can't fault for anything because they're pretty good. But the whole fucking hypocrisy thing just killed me because I get back and I'm like, you know, they had changed principles. And I asked about the old principal, you know, and somebody went and said, he's dead. Jeez, he's dead. Well, what happened? So I get to the high school meeting, and there's a couple of professors, and I'm like, what the fuck happened to Father Francisco, who was a priest? He got the disease. I'm like, the disease? All of a sudden, he got AIDS, okay? He died of AIDS because he had been having, you know, sex, you know, unprotected gay sex, okay? That's how he passed away. And I'm like, motherfuckers. I mean, seriously, okay? So that was the priest that ran my high school, okay? All these fucking pedophile priests, they keep shipping them around.
I want to mention real quick before you stop. The problem there was not necessarily that the man was gay.
Not at all. No, it's just the whole hypocrisy that the Catholic Church is against fucking, you know, they preach so hard how being gay is so bad, and first of all, he's supposed to be celibate, and he's supposed to be being gay is bad, and the motherfucker's just lying through his teeth. That's what I don't like. I don't have a problem with gay people. I just don't understand. The damn church, they preach against so much shit that they it's just the hypocrisy of the whole fucking church kills me, okay? You know? And so this whole thing with the Pope, I mean, just exposes even further the damn fucking enormous hypocrisy of the Catholic Church in general.
Well, I mean, I'll try to play the opposite side of this, although I think I generally agree with you. But I'll for point of discussion, you know, basically what the church has done in many of these cases, is say, look, you know, the person in question needs help. It is a private issue. We will deal with it. We will counsel them. We will, you know, we will do our whole little confession and forgiveness thing that gets done. And then, you know, they, you know, after they've done that, they've, you know, paid their price, so continue doing what they're doing. And presumably at that point, they hope they won't, you know, abuse more people or whatever. But basically, they're taking the position that, you know, if one of these people gets that's caught or found out during the course of official business or whatever, that they will deal with it as an internal matter.
But this is criminal activity is the problem. Yes. This is not something that you take back. Well, the guy managed his people poorly. Let's go and let's give him some retraining. No, no, no. This is fucking criminal activity. Anybody engaged in this needs to be in fucking jail for a while.
So now what? And you can inform me on sort of the doctrine of these things, but how is this different than, you know, the murderer going to confession and saying, you know, forgive me, Father, I have sinned. I killed somebody last week.
Well, I guess the problem is that these guys didn't go and apparently confess. Okay. These were found out because of complaints, because right. people went and like all the, you know, accusations surfaced. It found out it wasn't because these guys confessed. So that's why this is not the same thing at all.
So this is not that sort of, priest confessioner privilege, blah, blah, blah.
Not at all. Not at all. These were found out not because these guys confessed, because other people, because the accusations surfaced, because it came from many people, and because there was an uproar, and because these guys, all of a sudden, some people decided, well, maybe they kept the uproar, maybe they kept the accusations secret, but it was not because of a confession. It was because of accusations. Okay? Right. And that's where the whole thing just diverges completely, okay? So, you know, I mean, they don't have a fucking leg to stand on, you know, defending these people at all.
And so where this is, you know, there have been scandals of this sort in the Catholic Church going back decades at this point. There was a big rash of them in the United States, I guess, about a decade ago.
There's a big rash of them coming to light, okay? This has been going on a long time.
No, no, that's what I mean. These are now coming out in like the about 10 years ago. There were major scandals in the U.S. church, and there was going back and forth. Now there are some more in the U.S. that are coming to light as well. But the ones that are in question here mostly happened in Germany,
right?
And you know they have as characters in the drama. You know, the Pope's brother, like, not like brother in the religious monk kind of sense, but his actual brother, and the Pope himself were both involved in these as, you know, part of what was going on. Now, no one so far has accused the Pope himself of doing any of the abuse, but what he has been accused of is being completely and totally in the loop of what happened when these behaviors were covered up. And basically, other folks apparently may, you know, have their names on the decisions that were signed, but he was sort of in the loop that approved and knew about. And,
right.
you know, the fact that basically they were taking people who were known to be child abusers and to have been engaged in child sexual abuse in various different ways. And rather than reporting them to the civilian authorities or doing anything else, they basically, the standard modus operandi for these kinds of things was, you know, give them a slap on the wrist, a little bit of retraining and counseling, and then reassign them to a new location somewhere else where in many cases they did the same thing again.
Okay. Well, fucking pricks. That's all I gotta say.
So yeah, so
and by the way, the Pope's a big fucking fat ass liar. That's all I'm saying.
So what do you really think?
I have no respect for this Pope. This guy is probably the most scumbag Pope that I know of. And you know, I mean, this guy he's been shown to have been a racist. He's been shown to cover up this shit. He's been shown to have no compassion for nothing. I'm sorry, I have no respect for this jerk off. Okay.
So now, just to you know, clear the air here. Your feeling is not. This is very much directed against this particular pope, not necessarily against all popes or the whole Catholic Church or anything.
Absolutely,
like that.
Absolutely. I know plenty of people who are in the Catholic Church who are wonderful people. Okay, all right, many. I had the pleasure of having been educated by a number of people who were ordained in the Catholic Church who were wonderful people. But I'm sorry, but the Pope who is currently leading the church and the people who surround him, in my opinion, it's a bunch of scumbags. Okay.
Some of this talk that's saying, of course, so far, everything that's coming out of the Vatican is very much sort of denying that there's any sort of real issue here.
Right.
And we'll see if that changes. There seems to be some growing pressure, but you know, in the end,
what's the pressure? I mean, it's not a voted, it's not voted, you right. know, it's a frickin' dictatorship. I mean, you know,
so
they don't give a shit.
There are a couple things there that, I've read about, you know, so some people were asking, well, what can happen here? I mean, can you remove a pope? Can a pope resign?
The cardinals remove a pope? I believe yes.
So,
okay.
So the answer is actually not the cardinals as a whole. There's another group that I forget what it's called. It's probably some subgroup of cardinals. But anyway, there are ways that it can happen. It has not happened in I forget if it's 400 or 600 years, but a long, long time. And where, you know, it's back in the medieval history of, you know, there being popes and anti-popes and multiple claimants to be the pope. And, you know, basically, you know, the last time anything like this happened, this council met and basically decided that the person who was acting as the pope actually had never been the pope. So they didn't actually say they removed him. They declared that he'd never been the pope, and this other guy had actually been the pope. There's that kind of interesting stuff. And around the same time frame, sometime in medieval times, there were popes that resigned as well. But none of this kind of thing has happened, you know, in many hundreds of years. Anything that would happen here would essentially be. Yeah, either you're looking at precedents from, you know, medieval times, or you're basically talking about an unprecedented situation. So, you know, what happens if, you know, the Pope becomes such a liability that it's hurting the church worldwide? You know, who knows? But, you know, but this is also, you know, the kind of institution where, you know, it's a position for life. The guy's in his 80s, I think, right?
I have no idea how old the guy is, but I know that it was pretty old because it was quite a surprise. If people were talking about that maybe the church would try to go into a new direction and pick some young guy that could bring some energy into it, and what they did is they picked this old fucking curmudgeon piece of shit asshole who basically has, you know, his idea of like liberalism is, I don't know, you know, maybe that he wears, you know, one layer less of robe during the week or something, you know? So, you know, I don't know, you know?
Let's see. He was born in 1927.
So what does that make him? 83?
Anyway, so one potential...
Is our math right?
I don't know. Maybe.
Yep. 83. 82, 83.
One potential reaction to all of this would be just like, well, you know, he's actually 82 because his birthday's in April.
Okay.
But one potential reaction is just, well, you know, he just let it go. I mean, it's ancient history. It's whatever, you know.
And in a few years, he'll be dead,
and there'll be a new one. So what's the big deal?
Well, that's what the church is trying to do right now. I mean, that's the current strategy right now. Well, you know what the fuck. Well, you know, the press has a short attention span. They'll probably, you know, forget about it.
We were just talking about short attention spans in the U.S. I don't know.
Well, I don't doubt it that it could happen, and everybody will just forget about it. It still doesn't make it as a scumbag.
And the question is, you know, there's a lot of in certain parts of the world, the sort of kinds of feelings that you're expressing as a lapsed Catholic are very common, with people sort of accepting some parts of the church and not others, and, you know, saying, well, you know, I know the Pope says that, but that's not really the key part of my faith or whatever, and I'm going to do this other stuff. There are other parts of the world that are still very much, you know, aligned with the, you know, infallible Pope type of theology. And, you know, if enough of them sort of say, well, you know, he's the Pope, he's got to be right. It's the
right.
other people
who are there's wrong. There's a lot of people that think that, but I'm done. I'm out. It's been a long time. I'm out. You know, it's not a new thing. I'm out. I'm just, you know, they can't, you know, the Catholic Church has deviated so much, supposedly, you know, from what the actual teachings of Jesus Christ actually, if you try to read whatever he talked about, that honestly, I can't, you know, and it's not even that I'm saying that Christ is the Son of God. Let's not even go there right now. But if you just take him literally for what stuff that they're supposed to be a compassionate church, supposed to be a church that really, you know, tries to help people. It's supposed to be a church that is, you know, that teaches humility, poverty, you know, and then you see so much shit that happens that goes against that, that forget it. I'm done. I'm out. You know, that's it. You know, so anyway.
Okay. Well, I think we've had it for that topic. So, and I don't have any other topics on my list. So unless you've thought of some, Yvonne, we can wrap it up.
Well, we're done. We're toast. All right. There we go. Before I go and I get firebombed at my house, let's finish up.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for listening. As usual, email me, abelsmay@abelsmay.com, if you have any feedback or thoughts or questions or suggestions for topics or anything. And, of course, tell your friends to listen, too. We like new listeners. And that's it for Curmudgeon's Corner this week.
Try to say that three times.
I'm jumping all over myself and getting my tongue all tied up. And anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. Listen again next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Yvonne.
All right. Bye-bye.